All right, so chapter 2 in the nutrition textbook, 4th edition. We're looking at page 30. All right, so the chapter 2 is called Nutrition Guidelines and Assessment. What this chapter is going to go over is basically what is recommended by the people that have made nutritional guidelines for us. Which is the USDA, more or less, United States Department of Agriculture. And where do I want to go with this? Let's just go ahead and jump into the text, and we'll go from there. So, looking at page 30, what we're really trying to do with our nutrition is what? What are we trying to do as far as eating wise? What are the basics?
Like in eating healthy or just?
Just eating.
What are we trying to do?
Yeah, what are we trying to do?
Fuel our body.
Yeah.
Okay, so fuel our body.
Give our body what it needs.
Give our body what it needs. So what does our body need?
Vitamins and minerals.
Energy.
Energy, vitamins, minerals. Okay, good, good. So. It needs the nutrients, which we mentioned, those six categories of nutrients from chapter 1, correct?
Yes.
All right. So, there's many, 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 many ways in which you can go about getting these six classifications of nutrients. Do we all agree?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This is why there's no one easy diet that just works for everyone, because not everyone has access to the same foods and the same times, and all those different sort of factors are gonna come into play, and tastes and all that stuff, which we were talking about last chapter, how the different factors that affect food choices are going to create a whole ton of different diets. There's not too many people in the world that probably eat the same exact same thing every single day, unless you're in this class. But we have to understand, there's a few things that we need to follow. So planning how you will eat is kind of that first section, or they say linking nutrients, food, and health. So if you got all of your vitamins, minerals, macronutrients, and water, does that automatically make you healthy?
No.
No. Okay. And that's because we don't necessarily get perfect foods to deliver these micro and macronutrients and water, in a sense. Because some foods carry extra stuff besides just macronutrients, water, and vitamins and minerals, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So if, when I say extra stuff, what do you think I'm talking about? Potentially preservatives in factory-made foods. One more time?
Hydrogenated oils.
Yeah, so processed foods that aren't real food, that are just kind of input into our foods. That's kind of what we talk about. Like, processing of food leaves extra stuff in there. Okay. What else might be additional to certain foods? What else might we do? So we have like processing, we have like random chemical compounds that are input into our foods. I'm sure you've heard of like
concentrate,
sodium phosphate and phosphatane, blah blah blah, and all those things that you read on the back of the
xanthan gum.
Yeah, xanthan gum, and okay, yeah, yeah. All these extra stuff that is input, we'll say, into our food from a factory or process standpoint to make it look, taste, or smell better. Right, but what else might come from food?
Good.
So, yeah, they talked about like phytochemicals last chapter, just some extra stuff that might come in food or antioxidants, and how they aren't, maybe it might not be 100% necessary, but are extra stuff that comes in foods. Whenever we think about nutrition, we have to think of it as we want to look at the safest way to get all of the six categories of nutrients. Do we agree?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Eating processed food is probably not a safe way to get those six classifications of nutrients. Do we agree? Or it's maybe not as safe as eating stuff that might not have any processing to it, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, first off, when we think of that, we have to define what processing of food is. How do we define any sort of processing? What is processing?
It's altering something.
Altering something, okay. So altering something.
Like the molecular structure of it, or...
Okay, so let's look at some foods that we commonly think of as healthy, okay? Let's look at something like whole wheat bread. Is that modified from its original version?
Yes.
Yes, what is whole wheat bread made from?
Wheat.
Okay, and what does wheat look like in its original version? Kind of like a grassy sort of grain that has seeds on the top of it that makes it look like soft and cuddly little carpet. No, it's not really. It's like tall. It's like tall, like waist-high grass, we'll say, right? Okay, and then they harvest this grass. And do they serve that grass straight to your table? No. What do they have to do to the grain or the wheat to then turn it into bread?
Grind it down.
Is grinding it down a form of processing?
Yes.
Absolutely, okay. If you were to eat a piece of wheat off the stalk, or off, like, just eat grass, it would probably come out looking exactly the same way that it went in. If you know what I mean.
Delicious.
If you know what I mean, okay? I mean, you're pooping some grass, okay? Some foods need processing in order for us to digest them. We're in the wild, and we're camping or we're lost in the Canadian wilderness, yeah, some fun, or we're playing Survivor somewhere. If we go to this massive field of wheat, are we going to be super stoked?
No, probably
not. No, because what's up with me as one human and this wheat field of wheat? Can I turn that into food?
Tools you have.
Yeah, I mean, maybe if I was to chop it up and grind it down and then try to cook it correctly, I mean, it would take a lot of work to potentially...
Grass attracts bugs. Bugs attract small animals, though. You wake
up on something. So, potentially, what we were getting to is the processing, okay? If you have to process a food in order to consume it, is that probably the best food to eat?
No.
No. Okay, what other foods do we commonly have to process in order to eat, meaning we couldn't eat them in nature?
Grains.
Well, pretty much all grains, right? Can we eat rice off the rice stalk or the rice patty?
No. I don't know.
No, you can't. What do you have to do to rice? Or what is rice? Has anybody ever seen like rice growing in nature? You can't rip it out and start eating the rice, eating the rice off the stalk, okay? And once again, because those things have, we'll say, protective coatings that need to be ripped off and broken in order to digest it appropriately. Similar to corn, have you ever seen corn on a stalk, you can't just bite into that corn. It's rock solid, extremely hard, and eating that off the stalk is going to be very difficult. So all of these foods are going to require some sort of processing. What other types of foods require processing? What about this? We go out into nature and we find a piece of fruit on a tree. Do we need to process that in order to eat that piece of fruit off the tree? No, yeah, most fruit you're good to go. It's right there. It's from nature, and you just pull it off whatever it is, and you eat it. And it's zero modification required. Do we understand?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. What about some? Let's say humans eat meat, right? Okay, we're omnivores. We eat plant matter and animal, other animal matter. Let's say we go kill a cute little furry bunny. Sorry, I had to kill a furry bunny, but he's so cute.
Throw cute in your
I did because just for the vegetarians that like animals, you know, just okay. We'll kill a why don't we kill a moose? Moose are cool, but nobody's like attached to mooses, so we're cool. Oh, they're massive, yeah, but and you feel pretty badass if you kill the moose, right? Okay. Okay, so you kill a moose. Does that moose need processing before you can eat it? No. Potentially, I mean, if you wanna cook it to separate the muscle fibers and make them easier to digest, yes, you could cook it. Okay. But the moose doesn't necessarily require grinding up and adding shit to it and then eating it. Correct? So in nature, we could survive off of, we'll say, fruits and some animal meat, right? Okay. So what I'm trying to get you guys to understand here is that when you think of eating foods, you want to think of foods that can get you all of the six nutrients, classifications of nutrients, all of them, in the least processed form. Anything that comes in a wrapper, does it typically have processing?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay? This is why some people will say, let's buy fresh foods or whole foods. I mean, they've named a market after the entire thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay? If it has to come in a package, like a sealed off for freshness sort of package, it's probably not going to be your best option to eat, correct? Because it does require processing. Okay. So I'm going to let those sort of thoughts careen around your head, okay, as we kind of get into the rest. All right, so planning how you'll eat. We need to think of adequacy. Adequacy, page 31. Adequacy. Having an adequate diet means that foods you choose to eat provide all the essential nutrients, fiber, and energy to support and maintain health. Agreed. Adequacy. If you ever think of nutrient adequacy, you can think of, you want to eat nutrient-dense foods, foods that have a lot of vitamins and minerals and healthy, or we'll say calories, or from healthy sources, okay? So, I mean, what's the opposite of adequacy? Something like a soda. Is there a ton of, let's see. It directly gives an example in here. Soda pop, two hard-shelled tacos, and cinnamon sticks. Although this food's going to provide, or be from different food groups, we'll say, is that going to provide adequate nutrients for maintaining and growing, or for maintaining health?
No.
Because soda pop has only what? Just sugar. Okay. Typically in the form of high fructose corn syrup, which is processed sugar. Sugar's bad enough, and then you go process it to make it even more sweet. It's probably not the right thing to be having, right? Okay, so this is why high fructose corn syrup gets a lot of crap, which, I mean, it's just not healthy in general, but it's in the food system to make things taste good, okay? Then it has the beef tacos, okay? You got some whole grains in there, maybe with a corn tortilla and a little bit of beef in there, okay? And then cinnamon sticks, okay? More or less just some wheat and sugar, okay? What they're basically trying to get you to understand is that foods that don't have a lot of micronutrients, vitamins and minerals, are probably not the best bet to consume regularly. All right, I lost you already. Let's go ahead and move along. So balance. Balance means you're balancing food groups. Anybody ever heard of balance as a way to eat? Like you want to eat balanced foods, that sort of thing? Yes. Okay, meaning that what they're trying to get you to do is not eat the same food all the time because you want to mix it up to make sure that you get nutrients from different areas and the different food groups in order to maintain adequate health.
So eating the same foods is not recommended?
Well, you asked if eating the same foods is not recommended. What if all of those foods supply all the appropriate macronutrients?
Okay.
Can you eat that same food all day long, every day long? Yeah, absolutely, because there's no lack of health that's going to come from it. But if that food is missing one or more nutrients, then you might need to expand, and that's what balance is about. They're basically saying that most likely you aren't going to be able to find that perfect thing, which I'll help you guys find that. That's pretty simple. But we'll get to that a little bit later. All right, now they're talking about calorie control. Okay, I'm sure you guys have heard of this. What's a healthy diet? They're basically trying to define the healthy diet. Well, an adequate diet fills all the macro and micronutrients. A balanced diet helps you to get those macro and micronutrients from many food groups. Find balance. Then calorie control. You don't want to eat too much. I'm sure you guys have all heard of these things over and over again. It doesn't give you any direction, right? Just kind of like, here's some ideas. I mean, imagine applying this to sport. It'd be like CrossFit, jeez. Joke. Okay, no, that's a little bit tough of an analogy off the top of my head. So, So calorie control, you don't want to eat too much, you don't want to eat too little. You want to eat just the right amount, okay? Then nutrient density, you want to find foods that have the most macro and micronutrients per calorie. Okay, people have heard of that before, right? Nutrient density. When you try to eat foods, you want to focus on the foods that have the most vitamins and minerals per calorie, right? Okay, that's what nutrient density refers to. And name some foods that might be nutrient dense. Carrots, avocado. It doesn't have too many micro or vitamins and minerals, more just pure fat, but what'd you say?
Potatoes,
yeah. They got a lot of potassium and sodium and vitamins in there. What else?
Apples, oranges,
okay, good. What else?
Chicken,
yeah. It actually has a shit ton of B vitamins and iron and all the essential amino acids. Okay, spinach, ton of calcium, vitamin C,
greens, lettuce,
okay, so all you guys are naming a ton of stuff that's unprocessed, right? Broccoli, yeah, all this stuff typically comes in nature, not processed, do we agree? But then when we think of foods that are not nutrient dense, what do we think of?
McDonald's,
so processed wheat bread with a processed meat and processed cheese, with some processed ketchup.
Taco Bell.
So then you got things like, okay, well, fast food in general, you just have pure, just 100% processed stuff, and then fed to you. It tastes amazing, because they process the crap out of it to make it taste good, but you're probably not too nutrient dense, right? What other foods do you think of as being processed?
Cereals,
yeah, okay. So cereal, you have to process the crap out of cereal. Most people think though that cereal's pretty healthy, right? Your healthy whole grains from Honey Nut Cheerios
I love cereal.
May help lower cholesterol. American Heart Association approved. Okay.
I know.
Cinnamon Toast Crunch. What did you say?
What about juices?
Okay, so juices would be pretty nutrient dense, right? But they would be because they grab the well. Here's the thing. Hold on, let me get to it.
Don't they just put vitamins in there?
So depending on if it's pure fruit juice, let's say you juice your own oranges, are you going to get some of the micronutrients that are from that orange?
Yeah.
Yes, but you're also getting rid of something that they think is very important, and I think is relatively important too, which is what. Well, the fiber that's associated with that fruit. So if you juice 12 oranges, can you drink 12 oranges worth of fruit juice?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, oh, easy. It's like an 8 to 12 ounce glass. Can you eat 12 oranges?
Watch me.
Yeah, but it's going to be tough to eat 12 oranges, right?
It'll be better to blend it.
Hobby.
Let me get your take on oranges. I've heard you make comments about it.
When I think of certain fruits, I think of the starch to sugar ratio.
Okay.
So if you look at something like an orange, you're going to have probably a lot more sugar than you are starch. And the sugar in fruit is known as fructose. Good, yeah. Sugar in fruit is known as fructose. And fructose, the body doesn't deal with as well as far or compared to glucose. Okay? So when you look at something like a banana is about 50% pure starch and then 50% sugar. An orange is going to be near 100% sugar. But I'm not saying that an orange is bad. Just saying that if I'm going to have an orange in large amounts, I can relate that, or I need to make sure that I count that towards my sugar intake. Sugar intake. And if I'm trying to only have a certain amount of sugar, the orange is going to get me there a lot faster there than a banana. But total carbs in a banana and total carbs in an orange might be kind of similar, but one has way more sugar than the other. So orange, I mean, if you're going to go do a good workout right now, yeah, have an orange. For sure. A banana is just as good. Orange might get in your bloodstream a little bit faster, but because it's more refined, or not refined, but it's more a simple, pure sugar than a banana, because a banana you have to fight through a little bit more starch and fiber. But yeah, I'm not opposed to oranges. Just, I mean, it's way better than like going to get some french fries or going to get like a deep fried churro with sugar on it. Oh, how good does a churro sound right now? Okay. Nutrient density it's very easy to look at nutrient dense foods as foods. If you look on the back of the nutrition label and it just says, oh, a whole shit ton of vitamins and minerals. What do we have to be careful about when we look at food nutrient labels that just have almost every single vitamin and mineral, like your protein shakes that you have? Is that nutrient dense if it has 100% daily value of all your vitamins and minerals that you need?
Supposedly.
It is, typically, but is there a food with 100% just perfect?
No.
100% of every daily value? No. So how does that all those vitamins and minerals get in there? Well, they're added after and during the processing of that food. So protein shake, is it pure whey that you get from separating milk and the curd? Curds and whey? If anybody ever knew if that's whey protein that it comes from, just boiling milk and you separate the stuff. Yeah. Uh-huh. I've eaten some whey before. It just tastes like nothing. Just like, tastes like
bubbly
almost.
Milk.
What's that?
Bubbles.
Yeah, it's bubbly milk. but yeah, your whey protein shakes are just powdered form of that literal whey when they separate it from milk. If you ate pure whey, is that going to be healthier than getting a protein shake where they add all this other crap to it too? Yeah, but what tastes better? Yeah, I mean, you're gonna have a chocolate muscle milk with all this like perfect nutrient density because they added all that crap. Plus all their other additives and preservatives and other crap. And you look at the muscle milk label, it's 40 things long. Okay. I'm just trying to get you guys to understand that nutrient density doesn't just mean you look at the nutrition label and it says a lot of vitamins and minerals. Because you want to see, are these vitamins and minerals naturally occurring? Or were they added via processing? All right, just kind of putting these out there. Next, we have moderation on page 33. Moderation. Anybody ever heard eat in moderation? Okay, is moderation kind of similar to balance, or is it different? How's it different? How's moderation and balance different?
Balance. Balance
is how you eat, and moderation is like portion
size. So, if okay. So then, what's the difference between moderation and calorie control? Okay. This is what I'm saying. This is what the government's telling you to do. This is what the USDA is saying. It's like, here's some terms I'm going to throw at you that you should definitely stick to. Balance, calorie control, moderation.
Very neutral, generic.
They're very generic words that are very difficult to understand. What do you mean? What do you mean? And then when you get in here, they say, eat every food in a moderate amount, not one food in a lot. So, oh, you're going to eat chicken. Oh, you shouldn't have too much chicken. You should just have a little bit of chicken so that you can eat other stuff, too. Okay? So you can have a little bit of everything is what they're kind of saying. Just the right amount of everything. Which is a very good way to also sell you processed crap food, too. Right?
Mm. You remember Mariah Carey came out with that diet where she could eat whatever you want as long as it came in a forkful? So, like, she would just walk around eating just the forkful amount of anything.
What's a forkful?
That's like, very calorie control based.
Whatever you can get in one, like, fork serving.
I would get it.
That's
really
all you can eat.
Yeah.
For how many meals a day?
All right. Okay, so yeah, moderation. They're basically just saying you eat some foods that not in a lot of amounts. You don't just eat a lot of one thing. You should eat a lot of things. Okay, kind of similar to balance. Kind of similar to calorie control. You should eat the right amount of calories of different foods. Okay, you're just kind of mixing it up there. So basically, what you're saying is that I can eat anything in moderation. Right? Is that a good way for the food industry to be like, oh, you can have this ho-ho in moderation? Anybody here? You ever know what the ho-hos are, right? Just make sure. Ding-dongs. Okay, a little ding-dong. They're wrapped in little tinfoil. God, I miss being a kid. Eating ding-dongs and ho-hos.
Oh, God, watch your mouth.
All right, and then also, guys, be sure you eat a variety of foods. A variety is very important, okay? So based off these things of balance and calorie control and moderation and variety, you should have a good idea of what to eat, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, but you don't, and nobody does.
That was your big sarcastic.
Yeah, very, very, very much sarcasm there, which is why it's so confusing for someone trying to eat healthy, right? And this is why there's so many definitions of what is healthy eating, okay? I would rather have them say nothing at all than tell you to do this. This is very my opinion, but just in going through this. All right, well, we're very slowly getting through this, so let's kind of chug along here. All right, so page 34, dietary guidelines. Well, first off, let's look at on the left-hand side of page 34, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, the government agency that monitors the production of eggs, poultry, meat, and adherence for standards of quality wholesomes. The USDA also provides public nutrition education and performs nutrition research and administers the WIC or the WIC program. Okay. Not saying that this is a good or bad thing, but should any company that monitors a specific food group also be able to give dietary recommendations?
Kind of giving all the cards to one hand if you do that.
Conflict
of interest. There's some sort of conflict of interest in that department. Would you agree?
Yeah.
But actually, it's funny because the USDA doesn't say eat a lot of eggs, meat, and poultry. They don't, actually. But they do say eat a lot of other stuff. Okay. So just notice that just like any other government agency, the USDA is going to be influenced to give recommendations that might adhere to the highest bidder. Oh God, now we're getting down a rabbit hole. Look out. Okay. But remember, if somebody comes up to you and you're in a position of power and says, hey, if you help me out, I'll give you $1 million. Are you more likely to help them out?
Twice.
And you're going to get $2 million for that. Okay. Anybody watch House of Cards in here? The Netflix show? House of Cards? I mean, it's all about like political moving and pushing of influence and lobbying
undercurrent stuff.
Yeah, the undercurrent, yeah, exactly. It's basically a corruption in the government sort of stuff. But all right, U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, just to get to know them a little better, the principal federal agency responsible for protecting the health of Americans and providing essential human services. The agency is especially concerned with those Americans who are least able to help themselves. Okay, nothing too crazy there. And then we have Dietary Guidelines for Americans. The Dietary Guidelines for Americans are the foundation of federal nutrition policy and are developed in the U.S. Department of Agriculture, okay? And then the Department of Health and Human Services. These science-based guidelines are intended to reduce the number of Americans who develop chronic diseases such as hypertension, diabetes, cardiovascular disease, obesity, and alcoholism from who?
Go ahead.
From...
El Salvador.
El Salvador.
I guess, is there many levels of alcoholism?
I guess so. From
specifically the one from...
There's all... Oh, yeah, you guys... El Salvier. I don't know what that is. El Salvier. El Salvier. It's a French-ass name. It's very French.
French-ass name.
It's a French-ass name. It is a French-ass name. Bonnie. All right.
My little Chris.
Okay. So let's get to know some history about the dietary guidelines for Americans, which is very important. Is history super, super important in nutrition, guys?
Sure.
Why? Why would history be important in nutrition?
We gotta know where we come.
Yeah, history is important.
We gotta know why the recommendations that we currently follow were made, how they were made, and what might have influenced their making. Whoa, mind-blowing stuff coming up here. Ready? History. Here we go. All right, so dietary guidelines for Americans. And by the way, they aren't going to say anything too crazy about history in here, but I'll give you a little inside stuff on what's going on. All right, in 1980, the U.S. Department of Agriculture and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services jointly released the first edition of dietary guidelines for Americans, revised guidelines that had been released every 5 years as scientific information about links between dietary and chronic diseases is updated. So the purpose of the Dietary Guidelines for Americans is to provide science-based advice to promote health and reduce the risk for chronic diseases in diet and activity. Okay. So when we think of history in nutrition, I'm going to go off away from the book a little bit, but we have to think of where we get our nutritional guidelines from. Okay. I'm going to tell you a story. Here's a story. In about the 1950s, after World War II, we had a president named Dwight D. Eisenhower. He was a military general from World War II that was quite successful, and people liked him, and so he got elected president. In the middle of Dwight D. Eisenhower's term, he had a heart attack. He survived that heart attack, though. So all of a sudden, you can imagine President Barack Obama getting a heart attack. Is it big news?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, is it going to make all the media outlets? Okay, is it going to be massive? Sort of what happened? And all of a sudden, people start to realize that, oh my God, this risk of heart attack is real. Like, it's not just something that you hear of your random friend dying of when he's 80 years old or something. Or 50 years old, or 70 years old, whatever it is, but our president had a heart attack. So this sort of stimulated the science community to be like, whoa. Why do people have heart attacks? So this kind of started to create the sort of division amongst science-based researchers in the field of health. Doctors, more or less. As some doctors were saying, well, heart attacks are caused by the buildup of arterial plaque in the arteries. Well, we know that cholesterol is responsible for plugging the holes and adding plaque to the coronary arteries. So we need to blame cholesterol for heart attacks. Makes sense, right?
Oh yeah.
Okay, it's like, damage in the coronary artery causes plaque buildup, and the stuff that builds up the plaque is cholesterol. If there's less cholesterol, that means there's less plaque.
That's not true.
Maybe not. Okay. So this is the science-based community is kind of out there going, drumming away, going, what is really the cause of heart attacks? What's the cause of heart disease? And they determined the biggest lead that they had was the fact that cholesterol causes heart disease. Because that's what plugs the coronary arteries full of plaque. So, well, what dietary food increases cholesterol? Why'd you both go eggs? Don't make me smack you.
The yolk.
Eggs have cholesterol, but it's not dietary cholesterol that increases cholesterol. It's fat. Yeah, fat. Specifically, what type of fat? Saturated fat. Okay? And about 50% of the scientific community said that, yeah, you know, that sounds right. We'll back the fact that eating fat causes heart disease. There's a big jump there, right? All of a sudden, eating fat of any sort causes heart disease because fat increases your cholesterol. And increasing your cholesterol increases the plaque buildup in the coronary arteries.
So they're blaming fat and cholesterol.
They're blaming fat, which increases bodily cholesterol. The hormonal cholesterol in the body.
We make our own.
So this, all of a sudden, without proper scientific backing, becomes the standard. The late 50s, early 60s, in something that's called the McGovern Report. And the McGovern Report says 100% fat causes heart disease because fat increases cholesterol, and cholesterol plugs the coronary arteries, and that causes heart disease. Anybody ever heard about their cholesterol reading? Is that still a standard today in health? Oh, you have high cholesterol. What do? Oh, we got to lower that cholesterol. Otherwise, you're going to die of heart disease, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. It's pretty standard. Everybody knows it. Do you know that 50% of the entire nation is on cholesterol-lowering medication? Of the adult population.
Really? 50%. The doctor prescribed me high cholesterol medicine last year. I never got the prescription filled because I was already on the road to changing my diet and working out.
Good.
And it's been reversed just naturally
good.
For me.
Good,
working
cool.
Out and, yeah.
That's very good. Cholesterol can matter, but we'll get into that a little bit further down the road. What we want to focus on right now is the history about our dietary guidelines. So you can imagine, if fat causes heart disease, are people going to want to eat a lot of fat?
No.
So what does the USDA base their guidelines on?
Less fat.
Low fat diet. Anybody ever heard of the low fat diet?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's the diet. Here's the thing. If you can't have fat, then what do you have to eat?
Carbs.
Carbs, right? So do we see now how yesterday we went over the fact that carbohydrates are recommended in the largest amount of total calories per day, right? Greatest percentage of all calories. Okay. And then what? Then you have fat and protein are kind of equal in the lower end, but carbohydrates are really high. Okay. And when we think of fat, and we relate it to being fat, and then we relate being fat to heart attacks, fat just kind of sounds like the villain, right? So, in all of your textbooks that are based around nutrition, we're still very fat-phobic. Just to show you how fat-phobic we are, check out the front page of chapter 4 really quick. On page chapter 4 on... 145. Look at the page 145. That's the front page of the chapter 4 carbohydrates. Okay, page 145.
Rice.
Everybody see it? Rice. Little soy sauce next to it. A little yummy, yummy rice. Looks good. I kind of want some soy sauce and rice right now. Okay. Next, I want you guys to go to the fat chapter, chapter 5, and I want you to look at the front page of chapter 5. And what is it?
Nachos, cheese,
freaking nacho cheese. Okay, which one does everybody pretty much assume that nachos are bad for you?
Yeah.
Okay, does everyone pretty much assume that carbs are good for you?
Yeah.
Page 145. I just want you guys to be aware of these simple things that our society does based off of this incorrect fat causes heart disease sort of thought. Okay. So then really quickly to go back to this, so our history of where our dietary recommendations come from were influenced by fat being the main cause of heart disease according to the researchers of the 1950s and 60s. Has technology changed since the 1950s and 60s? Okay. But here's the thing, is it really easy to study nutrition to come up with new theories and thoughts and stuff? Is it easy to do that?
Technology, not yet.
To study human bodies and their effects on nutrition? Or nutritional effects on them? It's really not, because no one's going to sit in a room for days on end eating only what the researcher tells them to and then having studies done on their body. And if somebody does go out, like an epidemiological study, and asks if you ate low fat and you're healthy, does that automatically mean a low fat diet's healthy? No, because who knows if the people that eat low fat are exercising more. There's a whole bunch of different factors. Nutrition is very difficult to study. So for them to say that fat causes heart disease, or eating fat causes heart disease, is kind of like, I mean, tough. So we get back to, where did they go wrong in deciding that fat causes heart disease? So, fat increases cholesterol. Cholesterol plugs the arteries full of plaque. And increased plaque in the coronary arteries can cause heart disease, or is heart disease, and can cause a heart attack. Simple little equation, right? Boom. 1950s thinking. Bravo. Okay, but it turns out that somewhere along that way, something's wrong. Because what we have to think about is not necessarily what plugs the damage to the arteries. We have to think about what causes the damage to the coronary arteries. Okay, because there's no need to plug cholesterol into the cracks of the arteries if there's no damage to the arterial wall. Does that make sense? So when we think of an artery, it's the tubes that carry blood to our heart. Okay. If there's no damage to those tubes, there's no need to plug that damage with plaque. And there's no need for cholesterol to carry plaque to that area and plug it and build up
So that's what cholesterol is.
Cholesterol is a carrier of it's a helper. Cholesterol helps fix damaged things throughout the body within the arterial system. There's a lot of other functions for cholesterol, but that's one of its main functions. That's what it's become most popular for because of this cholesterol theory based on the fact that heart disease is caused by high cholesterol. But cholesterol is just doing its job. Cholesterol is going around all of your arteries trying to find areas of damage to plug. That's its job.
Yeah.
You don't want cracks in your arteries all over the place, right? That's a damaged artery. It's probably not going to work as efficiently. So that cholesterol is going to go around and try to plug and fix those cracks in the artery. But as opposed to focusing on lowering what the helpers that help heal your arterial wall, we should focus on what damages your arterial wall. Yeah?
Yeah.
That makes sense?